Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing what makes for the perfect anti-hero, as well as who are the best of them. Then at the end, now that everyone's had time to see it in theaters or on Peacock, we're going to debate how exactly Halloween ends. Spoiler alert, it never does, ever. It's never going to end. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. Aren't you supposed to be not here this week?
I'm not here. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Troy Heinrichs, who gives special applause because he's editing this week.
Ooh, what? Yes, I have to make it sound like Aaron's not here. So I'll just cut out all of his parts.
I was going to not be here, and then I had some time. If you guys want me to go, I will literally just leave.
Could you make like a tree and get out of here instead?
I feel like we all like that. We don't have to do your portion of work, except for Troy.
Feels like it, because I will tell you, nobody jumped on that format idea, really.
Some of us had busy weekends, okay?
Uh-huh, yeah. Had you actually went through the effort of making the format of what things you would talk about, is there anything that really stood out to any of you over the last week, other than
Kevin Spacey being a dumbass?
Well, besides that, that's just the whole negative.
How awesome the Rings of Power finale was.
Ooh, that was really good.
The craziness of House of the Dragon. What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I haven't picked it back up again.
Oh, I'm like shame. That with Rings of Power. So I guess we can split the difference and just stop talking.
We can do this in common and say, Andor, neither one of us has continued to watch.
There we go. Who sent the study? Wasn't there a study on Andor?
Yeah, there was a study that said that only really the diehard Star Wars fans are the ones who are watching it, but the there's no proof that anybody else are, you know, spending time with Andor.
I hear nobody talking about Andor.
I think somebody asked me about it, and I said, sure, it's fine if you're into that sort of thing.
If you're into it. I'm going to check it out at some point. I do want to. I mean, a lot of people have raved about it, critically speaking. But I haven't heard a lot of people that watched it.
Well, I think part of the challenge is that everything started to shift to the, you know, every week scenario. And when you get to the every week scenario, like Rings of Power, House of Dragon, it just got to be like, there's just too much to keep up with every week. So some things are just going to the, I'll just wait till it's done and then I'll binge the whole thing. That's kind of where I was at. I watched the first episode and I'm going to binge it when I have time.
I mean, that makes sense.
Something else that's really disappointing that nobody seems to be talking about is Midnight Club.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot about that either.
Yeah,
it's true.
I'm hearing nobody talk about. I hear more people talk about The Watcher. That one's getting a lot of raves, but nobody's talking about The Midnight Club. One thing that caught my eye this week is Old Man Yells at Clouds again, because Martin Scorsese, he had another one of his little tirades about cinema and what's art and what's not. He was talking about how our obsession with box office dilutes movies. So I want to quote him because I want to make sure I get everything he said before I make fun of him. He said, since the 80s, there's been a focus on numbers. It's kind of repulsive. The cost of a movie is one thing. Understand that a film costs a certain amount. They expect to at least get that amount back. The emphasis is now on numbers. Cost, the opening weekend, how much it made in the USA, how much it made in England, how much it made in Asia, how much it made in the entire world, how many viewers it got. As a filmmaker and as a person who can't imagine life without cinema, I always find it really insulting. Guy, you're doing everything you can to go get $200 million budgets for movies that don't need $200 million budgets. I am tired of Scorsese's nitpicking at fandom, because all those things that he's complaining about, box office, capes, he's got a problem with people who wear capes. All of those things contribute to fandom, which keeps movies alive, even the ones you don't like, even the ones you love. So shut up already. You sound like just an old guy on a porch. And he's one of our most revered filmmakers of all time, but I'm tired of hearing the complaints that you don't understand why people are talking about it, so therefore it's insulting. That keeps people talking about movies. What's wrong with that? That's what I ask you.
And I think the problem there is that he doesn't understand that as more and more things change, things are going to get a little bit different. I mean, think about NFL, Next Generation Stats, PGA Tour, ShotLink, and all this other stuff that the PGA Tour does. More and more data points give us more and more information on how to track the industry. And yeah, people are talking about box office here, box office in the global, box office in Asia, box office. But all of that makes sense because it helps you define your marketing budgets and where you need to market better in certain countries than others, so that you can really decide what a budget for a movie is going to be. So you can make your damn movie, Martin. Shut up and sit down.
I really feel like he's so out of touch with reality because he worked so hard to build his career, and he's had that privilege of success that he's just kind of ridden on for so many decades that he doesn't consider anymore that this is still a business and it's information that's valuable to other indie filmmakers and filmmakers who want to figure out if their movie is going to continue, if their franchise is going to move on past the first or the second. Like this, all this information, to Troy's point, this data that's being collected is what helps propel that or can stop it altogether. If you don't have that information, if you're not keeping up with it, then you're kind of setting yourself behind, unless you have a name that's so reputable, like Scorsese's, where you don't have to worry about money. So to me, it just comes off really privileged.
Yeah, I echo this, those sentiments, but also along those lines, it's also somebody who hasn't adjusted to the tastes of what people want now. He comes in with this flair of his own storytelling, and yeah, that's all great, but you don't need the kind of budget to make those movies anymore because of how far we've come in technology wise. It rings a lot more of somebody who's upset that they're no longer looked at in the same sort of light they used to be because they're not part of the cool kids.
It does come across that way, doesn't it? A little bit like bitter Martin.
Yeah, I mean, I know a thing or two about being bitter. That sounds a lot like it to me.
Jeez. I always get frustrated when people tell other people what kind of fans they should be or what they should be discussing about. You know what? Whatever they love about movies, it's okay. And by the way, Martin, I've been talking about box office my whole life, as long as I've been alive. I used to know like how much every movie that went to a theater made gross wise until global got more involved. Man, I knew what domestic box office was across the board. I cared about that. A lot of my friends cared about that. Now, I guess that was the 80s and late 70s, whatever. But still, people are still talking about the thing that you love, and that generates interest. That's not bad. That's fandom. And fandom is talking about whatever is revolving around the thing that you love. And I don't see how any of that's wrong. Any of it's a problem.
Plus, it spawned Fantasy Movie League when we used to play that.
Yeah, I think that's over. Day. Isn't that over? Yeah. Didn't COVID kill it?
It was just sad because it was actually really, really I thought it was a fun game, to be quite honest.
I love that. I thought it was a lot of fun.
It was really, really smart.
Except for the guy in our group who won every single season. Shout out to him for being awesome.
Do you know why that guy won? Because he's not friends with Martin Scorsese. That's why.
Exactly. Right. That's a good point.
To play devil's advocate for about 5 seconds on this, the one thing that I am concerned about is that there is sort of like a idiocracy effect going on when it comes to
everything in the world.
Everything. Yeah.
So like if I were to be on Martin's side of this, the side of it I would be on is that everything serves to the lowest common denominator, and as opposed to serving a serving to uplift or serving to inspire, serving to whatever it is that you want to call it, that Martin's probably more interested in. Everything is serving to the lowest common denominator to hit the highest amount of numbers, and to a degree of its own, it is creating an effect of which people are just being served up absolutely everything they want and not really thinking about it too much.
What you're saying is that you want to make a golf score or bowling handicap so that art movies that don't have hundreds of millions of dollar budgets get a handicap so that everything would be on the same playing field. Is that what you're trying to propose? If you wanted to be on Martin's side?
Though I like that analogy because I used to be a pretty good bowler. I really like that analogy. I don't really give enough of a shit to acknowledge it. I just wanted to play devil's advocate for a second to define the other point of view on this that Martin could possibly go to that would still make him look like an a-hole, but maybe an a-hole with a point.
I can't be the only one who feels like even hearing when a movie is doing really bad at the box office and we're like, oh, that Halloween Ends is a really good example. movies that were supposed to be really successful, or we anticipated would be really successful, had kind of a falling short of a weekend opening or whatever it may be, it entices me more so to check out that movie because I want to understand why other people are so negative on it and if I agree with them or if I'm misaligned. So for me, it also, even though the numbers may seem negative on appearances, it also makes me want to check out a movie even more.
It's called the wreck effect, or what I call the wreck effect, which is, you know, you're driving, you're on the other side of the street and you hear an accident. You want to check that shit out. You fly over there like, oh, that is, man, I hope everybody's okay, but check that out. You know, it's
that's
like that.
That's the America's Funniest Home Videos effect. You've seen a guy get punched in the nards 150 times. You're going to watch it 151 times.
Okay, well, we're moving past that because we don't have 12 hours. So right. Harrison Ford is confirmed to replace a General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross for Captain America New World Order. One question, and it's kind of, you know, I want to know, one, are you excited? But I also kind of want to know, they decided against recasting T'Challa because they said it was too soon. So why is it okay for Thunderbolt?
Okay, so to answer your question, you can't just throw anybody in for Thunderbolt. They found the perfect person to play Thunderbolt. Now, how much work is Harrison Ford going to have to do as Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross? Who knows? Because for those who don't know, Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross is the real name for the Red Hulk. So if they're going to do something where General Ross shows up and they're using Harrison Ford, I bet you we're going to see the Red Hulk eventually. So William Hurt played the role originally. He did a fantastic job. Which makes it nearly impossible to replace him with, except for Harrison Ford exists. And so Harrison Ford can do the voice of a giant rage monster that is a tactician in all red. And I think that'll work out just fine.
I mean, Isn't Harrison Ford going to be alive by the time this airs?
That's also a really good point. So, like,
your whore mouth. He better be.
I don't want him to die, but I mean, come on.
Like, I need Indy 5.
We're already like,
it's a valid question.
Is he going to fall down and break a hip running away from a boulder next June? I mean,
stop it.
He already couldn't run very well to begin with.
Right.
This is a good question.
Well, thankfully, like this role, if he does all the action stuff, is going to require him to be CGI'd a lot. So if that's...
I don't think he'll be doing that. I think he's going to be Harrison Ford.
He's going to be a guy behind a desk, and then it's going to be a stuntman doing 90% of the work. And then if the Red Hulk does happen to come out, then it's CGI. So literally, it's just going to be him standing still.
Right.
Barking orders.
It's going to be...
drinking vodka.
Exactly.
To answer that question, though, about why it's okay for this, but it wasn't okay for T'Challa, I think it's...
And I don't mean that as a complaint. I'm not complaining about that.
I think it's because of the impact of that character. Like, that was something that was iconic for the Black community that hadn't had something like that before, where Thunderbolt Ross isn't necessarily as iconic as a character, nor had as much impact in the entire globe the way T'Challa had.
Right.
And also,
that's also true.
The passing was very early in his life, considering everything. And there's just so many factors that go into it where I feel like they're trying to be more sensitive because of that reason. Mm-hmm. But even Thunderbolt Ross's last appearance, it was only a couple years ago. So it's not like the time is much different. I think it just is really about the impact of the characters.
I think she's actually right about that. It's not like they would actually go around and replace that many characters. Like, would they replace Rhodey again?
Yeah, why not? Maybe Terrence Howard's available and he'd probably still do it. I think that pretty much answers it, man. That's a very good point. You know, Troy wanted to bring this up. The NFL is going to air every day of the week, it seems, at least during Thanksgivings, because Amazon will now be the home of the NFL Black Friday bout starting in 2023, the season for next year. So I have no idea what this is, Troy. What the hell just happened?
Yeah, so, I mean, because Amazon Prime has been such a winner for Thursday Night Football, especially the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, great games.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, why did we even bother doing this? They NFL said, hey, Amazon's doing great and they're willing to spend us another check. So let's go ahead and give them another game. So on top of your normal Detroit Lions, Dallas Cowboys bout that you'll see on Thursday while you eat your turkey, after you do all of your shopping on Friday morning, you can sit down and watch another NFL game on Friday afternoon for Black Friday. I think it's just diluting the product at this point. It feels like Star Wars and Marvel at this point. Like, NFL is Sunday and maybe Monday night, but Sunday for sure. Anything else in the week, it's overkill, and it messes up the schedule. It messes up the traveling. It messes up the teams. It messes up everything. And I do not like this option.
I'll be honest. Everything that Amazon has done with football has, you know, not been good. I mean, they can't control the games. I personally have a very strong stance. I never watch Thursday night games. I love the NFL. I won't watch a Thursday night game because I can't tell you how rarely they have a good one. So why waste my time? I'd rather go to a movie, which I usually do, because that's usually the best time to see a new movie is see it on Thursday night, just so you know.
Yeah.
Go to the midnight screening it used to be, but now it's like 7 p.m. I'd much rather do that than watch another crappy game.
I'd much rather have this game be like on a Saturday. If you're going to do anything, put a Saturday night football game on. Granted, you're competing against college football, but Saturday football would be much better than Thursday football.
There you go. They won't do it, though, because of college.
Right.
Jennifer Salk at Amazon, since we're going to like connect the two, and just so you know, I don't know if you realize this, but Troy picked these ones out because they're Amazon related, but says that Rings of Power that is now finished with season one, and God, he wants to talk about this show so bad, was the one show to rule them all and lift up other properties on the service, such as The Boys and Wheel of Time. She's saying it did good.
It done did real good. There was like 25 million or something compared to The Boys having about 4 million or 8 million, depending on the season, for viewership. So it's done really well. And I think even to her point, if you listen to our podcast episodes where Troy and Aaron feud about the show being good or bad or worthy of watching, it's one of those things where, again, sorry, Scorsese, but the numbers are creating conversation for people to talk about. This was such an expensive show. Is it worth the dollar amount? Was it something that everybody should be watching or shouldn't be watching? And there's a lot of conversation that's continuing because of that.
Watch it.
I mean, if you have any Tolkien background at all, it was really, really good. I mean,
Is this like the same thing as that? Well, only the true fans are going to get it.
No, it's not actually the true fans are shitting all over it because of all the changes that were made.
Also, I'm not a Tolkien person. I couldn't read the books because I can't read 15 pages of what a belt buckle looks like. I'm not even exaggerating. So I'm not that big of a Tolkien fan. I'm only okay when it comes to the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm barely okay when it comes to the Hobbit movies. I actually love this in comparison to those two different properties. So it's really good.
What is it that you love about it so much then? If you're not necessarily devoted to the story and all of that.
Yeah. I mean, all I can think of is the wonderful nap time I've gotten from it. What about you? What do you love about it?
Well, the things that I love about it, I love the hints that they're playing at as to why the characters in the previous movies were the way they were. I love seeing where that development came from. I like seeing the layers they added to the orcs or Uruk, whatever you want to call them, depending on what part of the country you're in, I guess. I love there was a game I got to play with it while I was watching it was like, oh, who's this person supposed to be? Oh, is this person, or is this person that person? Well, this person just said that. This doesn't mean that. Da-da-da-da-da. And I'm not going to ruin anything because the last episode does put a nice little bow on it, but I was really happy with what happened on the last episode, which had so many layers of very cool things to it that I really enjoyed.
So many cool things that you would like actually question maybe how you thought about the rings themselves even being made and how they come into play. It was fascinating. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Such a cool idea. But I think the bigger thing here is does Ring of Power, because we've been doing this whole game, right? And I think this is what Jennifer was trying to say in her press release, was that, you know, does Ring of Power need to be as big as House of the Dragon for HBO Max? because if Rings of Power can get more people to check out more stuff on the service and lift up the entire service, is that not a win for Amazon versus House of the Dragon standing alone and nobody else watches another thing on HBO Max because Warner Brothers got rid of it anyway?
That's not true. That's not true. It's still a very popular channel slash app.
It is. It is.
I mean, I still know more people that will watch HBO Max than Amazon Prime by a mile.
Which is funny because most of America actually has Amazon Prime and doesn't even know it.
Yeah, they don't watch it. They just got it because they get free shipping. And I get it. I do. You need stuff. Stuff is important.
But this is great. I mean, this gives something to Amazon to get people in the door to enjoy the service, to see the great products that are out there, and of course, get ready for Jack Ryan season 3, which is coming soon.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm so happy.
That and Jack Reacher. Just bring all the Jacks. I'll just find a way to get Jack Bauer involved, and I think I'm sold.
Ooh. It'll be a jack off then.
Shit. Okay. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Share your thoughts on this episode, or you can leave a voicemail, 818-814-6246. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
A voicemail? What year are we living in?
If they want to leave one.
Nobody's going to leave us a voicemail?
They might. They do on Hitchcock. When I do Presenting Hitchcock, people leave voicemails all the time.
That's because it's something from 1950s. Ooh. It's probably the people who are at the end of their lives. They're used to voicemails. They don't know how to text.
Stop. You
send
know,
us messages on TikTok.
But it is speaking, funny that we've gone 500 episodes and now Aaron mentions the phone number.
I've mentioned it before. It's just been a while. So it's been a while. Speaking of.
Don't call me.
I have no transition for this whatsoever, but I do want to mention Bryan Cranston, who's one of my favorite actors ever. Annette Bening and Rainn Wilson, starring Jerry and Marge, Go Large. It's inspired by a true story. A retiree named Jerry Selby discovers a mathematical loophole to win the lottery. He and his wife, Marge, use their winnings to revive their small hometown. But when a selfish college student cheats the system, Jerry must find a way to make the game fair for all. You can buy or rent Jerry and Marge, Go Large, on digital right now. It's directed by David Frankel, and it's rated PG-13. And I have to tell you, with that cast, Bryan Cranston, Annette Bening, and Rainn Wilson, there's no way I'm not going to watch Jerry and Marge, Go Large, because the title alone is fantastic, and I love those actors. And you can also get a chance to win a digital copy of this if you send us an email to contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Don't leave a voicemail. contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with a subject line, Let's Go Large, and your name, and we will be entered into a drawing to win one of 5 digital copies of Jerry and Marge, Go Large.
I'm just excited because we can finally get the origin story of Large Marge in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh my God. I am not editing this week, so I have no control. Do not blame me for anything Troy has said. Do not hold me accountable. For any recent film or TV recommendations not previously discussed? Anyone?
I did start Handmaid Season 5 finally, and Juna's messed up. Messed up. That is all.
Because she wasn't before?
No. She's like way messed up this season.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to Vengeance. BJ Novak, who was on The Office. You guys know The Office? You know BJ Novak?
Yep.
He wrote and directed a movie called Vengeance, which is about a writer from The New Yorker who is, for some reason, a girl he had a one-night stand with that is from Texas. Her family feels like her and him had a thing going on. So they reach out to him to let him know that she died. And he feels obligated to come back to Abilene, Texas, and, you know, look into her death. They think that there might be something more to it. They're saying that, yeah, there was an opioid death, and the family's saying, no way, she was murdered. So it's very much a look into the world of Texans and a New Yorker, a fish out of water, trying to kind of find out what kind of people they are, what their story is. It's very much about developing a story for a podcast, so that obviously connects. It's very quirky. It's very funny. It is a little bit of a mystery, but really it's about the characters. It's about him realizing that there's more to life than the life that he's been living in New York. The things that the fakeness in his life, how everyone says 100% when they really don't mean 100%, things like that. It's really an interesting movie. He's also the star. Issa Rae is in it. Ashton Kutcher's in it. Boyd Holbrook's in it. It's a really good film. I really recommend people check it out. I mean, if $10 is the full price for Mission, I would give that one like $7.50. I really enjoyed Vengeance. It's on digital platforms right now.
I just remembered something that I wanted to talk about real quick. It's a movie called Significant Other.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my dear friend Aaron, not related to this Aaron, told me, hey.
It was totally this Aaron.
Hey, for some reason, I think you'll really like this. And I looked at, you know, what it was, and I had seen the trailer for it. And I'm like, okay, great. This is a couple goes in the woods, boyfriend loses his mind, kills the girl, whatever. Not a big deal. But Aaron's like, no, I think you need to watch this. And he doesn't normally get like that unless I really need to sit down and watch it, because this stars Micah Monroe. And I love Micah Monroe. She does some really great stuff, with the exception of It Follows, which she was really great in. Just the movie was kind of caca. and yet here I am watching this great little story about a couple that goes hiking in the woods and having a great old time. I can't tell you much about it because it's got a great twist to it. It's interesting. It's moody. It's well acted. And the guy who plays her boyfriend, Jake Lacy, is amazing. I actually loved him more than Micah, even though she's fantastic. Jake Lacy did so many things that were great and fun. And I really think if you have a few minutes, watch it. It's on the CBS app, Paramount Plus. Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise, because if you watch the trailer, it really looks like a stalker in the woods movie, and there's a lot more to it than that. In fact, it's totally different than what you think it's going to be. That's all I want to say about it. But yeah, I'm glad you checked it out, man, because that's a good movie.
Yeah, very much so.
Fun little Halloween find. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Antiheroes. We've got Black Adam. I don't know if you heard this, but The Rock has told you this about a billion times. Black Adam's here. He's going to change the hierarchy of DC Universe. It's going to make the world a better place, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But when it comes to anti-heroes, there's a big disparaging view of them in many respects, because what some people love about antiheroes, other people hate about antiheroes. You know, sometimes antiheroes don't have much of a moral code. Sometimes they do. So what makes a perfect antihero? Troy, when you look at antiheroes, and you've got them all across all kinds of genres, what do you consider to be a perfect antihero?
I think it's someone that truly means well. It's almost like they could be a villain, but because they end up saving the day or doing something good, it truly makes them into the hero monocle versus the villain side of the coin. But you really have to be able to look at them and say, wow, man or woman, like, what you did was really messed up. Like, it was just beyond repair, like what you were doing and how you approach a situation. But at the end of the day, I kind of get it, and because I kind of get it, I kind of like you, but I don't want to like you. So it's like this internal, it makes you internally struggle with yourself on whether or not you're going to believe the character and either root for the character or not root for the character. And if you can do that through the entire course of the movie and in the end go, man, that was really great, like, I totally am behind that character, then it's done its job well. But you have to be questioning it, like, up to the last minute to say, like, am I really going to buy into this person or not?
Oh, so you want to debate until really the end, and you go, okay, that's who that guy is or woman is.
Yeah. Can they overcome their own demons and their own struggles in order to do the right thing at the end of the day?
See, I don't need them to do the right thing, and I don't need to question if I'm on their side or not through the whole thing. They could literally be doing the most awful things, but if I can say, I get it, you know, if it's a revenge film and something, which is one of my favorite, like, subgenres, if I can stand behind it and be like, yeah, I understand, then you're great in my book, especially if it's fun to watch. If it's you're trying to do something for the betterment of the majority, I think a lot of people could consider most of the superheroes that they like, or a lot of them, to fall into that category. Deadpool is a perfect example. We love watching him, but he does some really messed up things. But he's generally doing it for mostly good reasons. Reasons we can actually accept. You know, for the most part.
Well, on the same token, when you phrase, I'm just going to, because you brought that up, would you say like John Wick is somebody you can get behind? Because when you think about it, he has basically murdered hundreds over a puppy that he knew for 5 minutes.
First of all, it started from this small thing, but they decided, they knew that it was going to cut him emotionally and deeply. They were doing something so intentional to hurt him and mess up his life. And honestly, there's no justification for murdering a puppy. Like, I'm not going to find any reasons to get behind you for murdering a puppy. You could have murdered him, and maybe I'd get behind you for murdering him. But when you murder the puppy, there's no reason.
What if he pees on your pillow while you're on it?
Then that's really unfortunate, and maybe the puppy sleeps outside if you're going to mean to it or something. Fair enough.
All right, good.
That's more on you than it is the puppy.
You're right.
Truly, train it right.
You're right. So on paper, you know, when it's just a bunch of words on paper, antiheroes don't do much of anything for me. The concept of them doesn't really do anything much for me. But when you put the right person behind that antihero, the right actor, when that actor brings that character to life, it's always the actor that I see and gets me to buy into it more. Because if I were to sit there and just read a book about that character or read the words on paper, I would never make the kind of connection that I would as the actor behind the character puts into it. So if that actor can convey to me that that character is actually somebody that I want to care about, then that's a lot of it. You throw anybody else in the role of Deadpool, you can't do it. You throw anybody else in the role of John Wick, you really can't do it. Even with the puppy sense, like, you can't throw anybody other than with John Wick, Keanu kind of conveys so much emotion in so small space that you really pay attention to him and feel for him. And you really can't see anybody else taking on that role and giving you the same sort of feeling that he does. So that's what, to me, the antihero is more about the person who portrays them than it is the actual character themselves.
So for me, they have to have a moral code of some sort. You know, I know a lot of people like refer to Riddick as this antihero. I don't think Riddick is an antihero. I think he's just a villain. He has no code except self-preservation. And sometimes people's lives get saved because they were in the way. It's never anything. There's no moral code there except selfishness. While Snake Plissken, which is very much who Riddick is modeled after. I mean, it's almost a carbon copy. Snake Plissken is self-serving, but ultimately does what's right when the time calls for it. That's the difference between a hero or between a villain and an antihero. An antihero is never a hero because, by definition, a hero always does the right thing. You know, there has to be a level of, I don't care, but they also have to have some kind of moral code. There has to be some moral fortitude. There has to be some line that they, not necessarily that they won't cross, but they are very, very aware and cognizant that exists. You know, a character like a Riddick doesn't know that that line exists because they don't care. Plissken knows, and he won't step over certain lines. Like, I have no doubt Riddick would take a baby and throw it off a cliff if it meant Riddick's going to live. Plissken never would. That's the difference between those two characters. So moral code is number one. An ability to do what others will not do because their code's too rigid. So that's a real big difference between an antihero and a hero, is a hero has a hard stop. You know, Captain America, Even when he was going against the Accords, you know, he still had a hard stop of things he won't do. I will not do that. That is wrong, period. An antihero will, I think it's doable. I think we can do that. I think it's okay if we murder 12 people, if it's for the greater good. You know, it's basically every Chuck Norris character of all time. They will go that extra distance if it's for the greater good. It's almost every Clint Eastwood character of all time. I mean, there's a lot of actors who spend their whole careers playing anti-heroes for good reason, because they're the people that we wish we had in our world, even though we really don't want them. We don't want vigilantes and all that stuff. But on the same token, there are so many injustices and wrongs.
Speak for yourself, first of all.
Well, there's so many injustices and wrongs that you wish somebody would come in and fix it and address it, because the rules make it so hard to get things done. You know what I mean? You need Dalton to come in and roundhouse kick some people to the face in order to clean up that bar, because otherwise it's never going to happen. You got to be nice until it's time to not be nice. There you go. And determination to solve whatever dilemma they're dealing with. No time for that. Those rules. That's my perfect anti-hero. Do you ever have a difficult time rooting for them, Amanda? It sounds like you don't.
Hardly ever. Generally, like, if I feel like if it's justified, I mean, I get it. Like, it sucks. And it might be me. I might be one of the ones who die. But, like, I get it. There's a lot of that. I feel like I'll use Game of Thrones because I was just watching the newest House of the Dragon. There are so many times where there are characters who do really horrific things. In any normal standard, you'd be like, that's a really bad thing to do to someone. But if you understand the context, context changes things entirely. You might be like, okay, well, I kind of get it because they're trying to do what's actually going to be best and maybe help the majority of people versus just this preserving this one person or something. There's a lot that I can, I don't know, forgive, I guess, for someone if I feel like they're justified, if they're going for justice, if it's for revenge, yep. Those sorts of things where I can back you. And if you were really like harmed or destroyed or something like that, and you do something even worse to exact your revenge, I'm literally going to root you on. Go, sister. I am on board with you. I will hand you I will take part in your quest if I can. That's where I stand.
There's an episode of 24 where Jack Bauer is trying to, I don't remember what the mission was.
Electrocuted dude with nipples. Mm-hmm.
No, not just that one.
Shoot the guy's wife to get him to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he has this, he's trying to interrogate this guy who's played by Peter Weller. And instead he shoots his wife in the leg to get him to talk, which he doesn't. What an a-hole. I was okay with that. So I have no problem with anti-heroes in entertainment, because if it's for the right mission, I have no problem with it.
I'm a little exhausted by anti-heroes. I feel like we're surrounded by them in every single bit of entertainment. And, I think we need a little bit more Captain America's out there.
Aren't you kind of tired of Captain America? Like, I love Captain America, but I feel like that's what we've had the White Knights for most of our life on Earth until the last probably decade, maybe 15 years.
I disagree. No. The 80s are full of anti-heroes.
Yeah,
guys, the 80s, that go out 90s, machismo. Yeah.
80s, 90s, like, you know, the 90s gave us Deadpool. The 90s gave us Punisher. The 90s gave us so many of these characters that everyone's so proud of and, you know, gung-ho, you know, Lobo, which isn't in movies yet, but we're going to see him eventually. You know, the 90s was like an era in which a lot of these anti-heroes that we're looking at now are strongly like based off of. So it's exhausting to me because we've become, as a society, we become so many people who look at anti-heroes more often than we do at heroes. Like your reaction, Aaron, was, aren't you tired of that? And no, I think we need more of that.
I need flaws. I don't want people that just don't have any flaws. Anti-heroes have flaws. Heroes never have any flaws. They're always so
perfect. Captain America had flaws. He was a man.
Hey, he's my favorite Marvel universe hero that isn't Deadpool. But I don't even, they're not in the same universe. Not yet. So
Deadpool's not a hero though either.
I love Captain America because he does stand hard and fast, because I try to be like that in my real life. But when I'm watching TV, man, it gets a little tiring when they're, you know, I'm always going to do the right thing. I'm always going to do the right thing. When we live in a world where nobody does the right thing, it feels like.
Yeah. Well,
that's, I think it's ironic that you're saying that, because to John's point, all of the things
see
that you
more
love.
The, yeah. I want to see it more.
But hold on.
World.
All the things that you love, especially if you look at the 80s and use Snake Plissken as your example, use Han Solo for Christ's sake.
One of my favorites. That's Indiana Jones is one of my favorites.
But they're iconic.
Sure.
Also an anti-hero, sure. Okay. I would argue. They're the people who are flawed, and we exist solely, I think, in a society where people are extremely flawed and they try to do the right thing. Sometimes they fail, sometimes they don't. And having actual heroes, people who have life flaws and things like that, but just have such a strong moral compass, that's even more rare. We don't get that in our reality, and we sure as hell don't get that very often in our movies.
Yeah, because you're trying to think about society today, and you know, like much like Aaron, like I want to do the right thing, and I live from a pretty good moral code perspective, but at some point the right thing is the wrong thing, and that's when revolution happens, and revolution has to happen in order for change to take place sometimes. And it's these anti-heroes that are standing up and saying, hey, you know, this is wrong, this, we got to do it differently, and they're willing to say why not, and they're willing to ruffle some feathers in order to make it happen, because when it happens you're like, hey, this is actually a good thing.
I'm gonna leave you with one quick point to think about how influenced our society has become by anti-heroes and how it's been portrayed. And I'm not trying to say that movies and TV shows have created this in our society, but I do think it's become something that people look up to in certain minds and certain individuals who have their own struggles think that they can become quote unquote heroic, but truly they're more of, I mean, I wouldn't even call them an anti-hero, but they think they're being an anti-hero. And I'll leave you with Kyle Rittenhouse as an example. That's someone who went to a situation armed and ready to, what he thought, do something heroic, ended up murdering people. And that, I mean, feel however you want about what happened, that is still someone who felt that they were essentially being an anti-hero. And we have a lot of people who fall underneath that category in society these days, significantly more than people who are just going out there and being heroic, willing to put their lives on the line for literally anybody.
I think we have in the real world, we have more just non-heroes. They're just, I wouldn't call them quite villains. Well, they're selfish, self-preservation. I mean, I never in a million years thought I'd call Liz Cheney a hero, but I will now. Anybody that stands up to that kind of nonsense, to flat out, yeah, and I'll say it, flat out lies. Anybody that stands up to that, I admire. Whether I agree with her politically or not, I admire that. I admire, but I'm talking like just in entertainment. Maybe I like them more. I like them more in entertainment. I wish we had better people that are heroes in the real world, because I guess when you see anti-heroes in movie and TV, at least they're standing up for the right thing.
They're funner.
I feel like in the real world, they're always standing up for the wrong thing. The people that think the rebels are standing up for things that aren't good or decent or honorable. It's really just self-preservation, selfish motives. It's never really for the betterment of others.
Right. That's why, like, going back to Amanda saying with Kyle, I mean, that is exactly what Aaron's talking about. That's not anti-hero. That is just, I'm going to do it because I want to get my 15 minutes of fame. That's a completely different way to look at it.
Well, I'm not going to, all I'm going to do is like look at some of the iconography that is being borrowed.
Look at you using
from
big words, John. That's hot. Yeah. Look at you go.
Look at some of the iconography that's being borrowed from media. You know, track down who's using the Punisher skull for whatever it is they're using it for.
Oh yeah.
Track down, you know, even Deadpool's to some degree. Track down who's using Deadpool for their logos and that sort of thing. And you start to realize that maybe we are pushing some things a little too far, and we do need to be prouder of our heroes than we have been.
That's a good point. I come from a generation, and I lived a life where I very much was Bender. So maybe that's just what I see as, you know, I feel like for my generation, a lot of the people that would, I guess, be called anti-heroes were standing up for what was right. And we live currently in a world where there's way too many people only standing up for their own self-interests.
Right.
It really has very little to do with what.
And I'm really sorry that I turned this conversation into what it is.
No, because there's definitely a
don't apologize.
It's a matter of like, it's not like have and have nots or right and wrong, but there is just something that's morally correct. And the fact that we have people doing immoral things, and the things that are morally correct don't get the light of day, or don't get the people to stand up for the things that are morally correct. And I'm not talking, you know, right wing moral, I'm just talking about like human life, decency things, right? People need food. People need jobs. People need education. People need healthcare. There's just moral things that need to happen. And if there's an anti-hero that can stand up and fight against the system in order to make that change happen, like, those are the people that should be celebrated, as long as they do it in a civil, nonviolent way.
But see, that's something that we could idealize, but isn't going to play well in film. So we go to anti-heroes. We go to the ones where they can break rules, but we can still side with them. And like, they're a little bit edgy, they're rebellious, but they're fun. And what they do is fun. They make it fun. They make it appealing to be that rule breaker, even if it's in pursuit of justice. It doesn't matter what the reasoning is, as long as you make it look cool and you make it look fun. And that is exactly how every anti-hero is portrayed.
That's true. But I do think people would celebrate more heroes. I guess you're right. There probably aren't as many straight up heroes as there used to be. Is that fair? I guess fair. You probably have a good assessment there, John.
Yeah.
Maybe because people have become more interested in nuanced heroes and nuanced villains and everything else. So a lot of villains are kind of going the other way and vice versa. But then you've got, you know, Top Gun, Maverick, massive hit. People loved it. It made a bazillion dollars at the box office. And I have a hard time, even though he is a little bit of a rule stretcher, I wouldn't call Maverick an anti-hero. I think he's a straight up golden boy hero of a bygone era in a way. So do you feel like that movie's success means that people do want more of what you're talking about, John? Like, they want more of that and less of the angsty, flawed anti-heroes?
God, I hope so. I mean, Top Gun had a lot of things that are going in its direction. You do have a lot of nostalgia behind it. You do have the fact that it's a perfect story for this time in our lives. The other thing it's going for it is that you do have a hero who is on every single level a flawed person. So he's somebody who wants to do who feels like he belongs in the cockpit of a plane, who feels like he needs to be on the front line of every single battle, and who is trying to do the very best he can to be the very best pilot, to be able to do all those things. Yeah, he is all those things, and like, he does the best he can to do right. So God, I really hope that eventually we start seeing more heroes like that my heroes growing up were Optimus Prime, Luke Skywalker, and I always felt like the power of your promise is more important than anything else. And like, I know that in my adult life that I've lived that rule on every single level, you know, my promise is that I'll treat everyone the way I want to be treated. And I will, you know, if I do make a specific promise to you, it gets held to the exact letter of that promise. And I wish more people would do that.
See, I kind of feel like Maverick isn't a hero. I feel like he does fall more into anti-hero because he's willing to take risks that could end other people's lives in the sorts of training he did. It was so dangerous that they were like, literally only this guy can do it. But he's like, no, I'm going to teach you guys how to do it. And if you decide not to do it, you're pansies. You're going to do it because you can.
I don't think
the movie went like that at all.
But I don't.
I think that's a very dark way to look at that movie.
Yeah.
But he takes a lot of dangerous risks.
He believed. Because he had the elite, Manda. He believed in them.
Sure. Yeah. But he's not Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso is someone who is just pure, like Captain America, but still has
He never laid down in front of Maverick's plane. You know what I'm saying?
But you know what I think is funny is that I've heard nothing but amazing things about Ted Lasso, and everyone's always said that I need to watch that show. I still refuse, and I'm not going to do it.
No, John, you have to.
Amanda, finish your thought.
If there's anybody that needs to watch Ted Lasso, pay you. John.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think makes anti-hero properties so prominent in our society is people, especially nowadays, we're so overwhelmed and consumed by the negative news and the bad things that are happening in society that we're looking for a source that can fix all of those wrongs. And we don't want to live in the pure goodness of a heroic state because it's too easy and it doesn't feel like it's reality. That feels that feels too far-fetched for us. And so to live in an anti-hero world or in these properties, you have a flawed society where things are being resolved, but it feels real. It feels like we can connect and put ourselves into that situation, and we're actually hopeful that somebody will come in and fix these damn problems. And that's where I think we're so consumed in, versus like, we don't want to be completely happy. We don't want the Brady Bunch.
So okay. who are your favorites? Who are your favorites? Your favorite anti-heroes? That's the topic we were talking about. Who are your favorite anti-heroes? Troy.
I'm going to say Ellie from The Last of Us, which granted is a video game, but it is coming to HBO next year and I'm super excited. But Ellie is a classic anti-hero, especially when you get into the second game.
Well, thanks for the spoiler.
Really, really, really interesting arc for her. Cable, Deadpool 2. Really love that he's just doing what he needs to do to fight for what he believes in for his kid. And I think that's just a real classic one there. How can you not go with Billy Butcher from The Boys? I mean,
yeah.
The dude is like, if I could be Billy Butcher, I totally would, because I think he's just super awesome. And
you just want to call everybody the C word? Is that why?
No, I just, Urban's just really cool. I just liked him from everything that he acts in, everything that he's done, from Lord of the Rings all the way to The Boys. It's just, he's just a great actor, and I love what he does with the character.
Is he really an anti-hero, or is he more of a villain that just
He's a villain. He is a straight-up villain, but I think he's trying to do what's right for the world, so kind of an anti-hero.
Well, and he's doing what's right for his like...
I can see the argument.
Missing he's wife and missing kid. He's
trying to take revenge on Stoops for what they did to his wife.
Yeah.
But he ultimately has done what's right for others, so he has done good, too, as well. So, I think
that qualifies as anti-hero.
Yep,
he doesn't give a shit about others, though.
That's not true.
He's just doing it for revenge.
That's not true. He cares about Hugh.
Yeah.
Huey?
Yeah, he cares about him. Yep.
He messed Huey up, so yeah, whatever. Go ahead.
We agree to disagree.
Hey, he prevented that little tiny Ant-Man from running around after the first episode of season 3. That's all that matters to me.
That's funny. Who else you got, Troy?
And then Arya Stark. Starts out as a
small
child, don't really think that they're anything, and then it turns into a lethal assassin, especially when you talk about that season 7 open. I mean, just super badass.
Amanda?
So first of all, I love the Arya pick, and what I'm noticing through a lot of these choices just from hearing Troy's list is that we also, not only do we make a lot of these anti-heroes really cool, but we also make them, and I'm going to take Arya out of that because she's a child, we make a lot of them really hot. We make them attractive. Like, we either want to befriend them or we want to, like, be with them. Frank Castle, the Punisher, great choice. He's an example of that.
And the thing I was looking at when I was looking at my list here, Amanda, too, now that you've mentioned that, I had June from The Handmaid's Tale as well. All of these people on my list are having to do with family.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Family.
Family. Also, I have to mention Professor Snape, because he is one of the most underrated, I feel like, but
always
incredible anti-heroes to have existed, because everyone thought he was a villain from the beginning, but he really did turn out to be a good guy, just trying to do the right thing and had to make sacrifices along the way. Spike and Angel from Buffy. I can't not mention them.
I'll take Angel over Spike.
I'll give you Angel. Spike's still a douche.
Yeah.
He raped her. He raped her.
He's not a good he's a villain as far as I'm concerned.
I honestly don't even count that, because I feel like it was so out of character. Like, they just did a horrible job with the writing for that character. It did not fit.
I think that's where Joss's career went off the rails, is when they put Spike in the finale.
Elizabeth Salander from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I love me some revenge, ladies. I really love revenge flicks. So someone like her is iconic for me. Walter and Jesse from Breaking Bad. How do you not root for them, even though they're selling a lot of drugs?
Hold on a second.
I'll give you Jesse.
Walter, yes. No, I'll give you Walter. Jesse is what we call a victim.
Okay.
Jesse was guessing the whole way.
I will never give you Walter. He is not a hero in any way. He is a straight up villain. He's just,
he starts as an anti-hero and then he turns into a villain. But
Does he turn into it, or was he always one?
That's a great question. But I think
it begins. It's a great debate about the show.
Yeah.
It is. It starts where he is an anti-hero. He's just trying to make ends meet. But here's the thing, is these circumstances can turn you into a villain. And if you lean too far into your anti-hero-ness and trying to, quote unquote, get justice, sometimes you fall and you get so into it that you are consumed by these bad actions and you become the villain of your story. And that's where Walter sits. But he started as an anti-hero. And so that's kind of where I'm like, the two of them.
Hmm. Anything else?
And then John Wick.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Gotta mention John Wick again. You kill a puppy, you deserve to die. That's how it is.
I'm going to give you two that I think are anti-heroes, and I'm going to explain the reasoning. One, the shark from Jaws.
You want to come in my land? You deserve to die.
What exactly did he do wrong? I mean, if we were in the forest and we took down a deer, would they be villains? I don't know. I mean, it really just depends on your perspective. They could be just hungry. I don't know. He's in the ocean. You're swimming in his. He's just hunting. That's all he's doing. He's not, except maybe in Jaws 4, that's a straight up villain because he's attacking one family for some reason. But the shark in Jaws, total anti-hero. Because he's got a moral code. He's doing to eat. He's just going to eat. And he'll do whatever he can.
So he's a survivalist.
There you go. Exactly. Another one, similar vein, the Queen Alien. What did she do wrong? You went on a mission to kill her. She did nothing to you. She's just hanging out at her house and you decide to barge in with a freaking Bill Paxton. That is not a welcome. I would not embrace you either. I would want to kill you and everyone that you came with. Anti-hero.
So this is where perspective is really key, because depending on the way you look at it is how you're going to see and determine who's the anti-hero exactly. And who's the villain.
Agreed.
You think about the war that America has started in many instances, even though we feel justified and we feel like we're doing the right thing because morality and stuff, you're also, you look on the other side, there are kids who are,
hey, let's not, we're not a political podcast.
I'm gonna sidestep the social justice and go right to so the Queen Alien shit a bunch of babies out of front, uh-huh. And those babies ate a bunch of people.
Again, they were just surviving. So is really the Queen Alien doing anything that a mama bear wouldn't do? Is she really that wrong? I'm like, if you look at it from her perspective, is she really that wrong? Did she really? She didn't go to Earth and then start eating humans. They went to her house and decided to kill her.
So you're really saying that Leonardo DiCaprio was wrong and the bear was actually the anti-hero?
Kind of.
Well, the bear just wanted to get freaky.
Yeah. I mean, you're in the woods. So my other anti-hero, Snake Plissken, I already talked about Bender. You know, I already talked about him. Malcolm Reynolds, obviously, from Firefly/Serenity, one of my favorites of all time. Mila Jovovich in literally everything. I very rarely like the movies that she's actually made. I think she's fantastic as an anti-hero, like always. She's great. It's the movies because she keeps doing them with her crappy filmmaker husband. Ash Williams, we talked about him enough last week, so I don't really need to go into that. Raylan Givens, one of my favorites. The Bride. The Bride. So Danny Ocean. Love Danny Ocean. I would definitely call him an anti-hero. He's doing a lot of wrong, but he's also trying to do right. Wolverine. Mm-hmm. And any Sylvester Stallone character. It's probably why I like him. Or
Rambo
Van Damme.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Cobra. Anything from the 80s.
Well, First Blood is one of the best anti-hero films you'll ever see. Because that is a guy that he's literally done nothing wrong except be tortured and punished for his being because they see him as inferior in many respects. And so the training that we gave him is what he reacted with. So it's a total anti-hero. It's such a great movie too. First Blood is a fantastic movie. Doc Holliday. I would put him as an anti-hero because he does ultimately do what's right when it matters. Jack Bauer, of course. I mean, Batman. I think Batman's probably the most famous.
Yep.
Anti-hero. because let's not joke around. I mean, this is a guy who's got severe issues and loves beating the shit out of random people. He's not a hero, but he's an anti-hero because he's ultimately doing
it for good. He's being bad people, though.
Of course. Never makes a mistake, right? Couldn't just beat the shit out of the wrong guy or woman.
Yeah, I'm not going to have this argument with you.
And Eric Draven, of course, the girl.
Nobody from Cobra Kai?
Well, you know what? Johnny Lawrence. Yeah, I guess you could call Johnny Lawrence.
A softball team of people as anti-heroes already. You want to throw some more on there? It's like listening to one of your lists, Amanda. Come on.
Yeah, it's actually a list. I did research. So you want to say Johnny Lawrence. I think that works. Yeah, 100%. He's an anti-hero. He wasn't until Cobra Kai, though. He was just a villain.
Yep, I'll give you that. Yep.
All right, how about this for some research, all right? William Defense Foster falling down.
I cannot call him an anti-hero.
He is an anti-hero.
You're talking about Michael Douglas's character, yeah?
Yes.
No way. No. Nope. I do not find him heroic. I get what you're saying, but there's a lot of, I mean, where he's just a flat out racist in many respects. So I don't consider that heroic.
Okay. Speaking of racist, my next person on my roster, Derek Vineyard from American History X. That's Edward Norton's character.
I still can't go with that one either. He's same vein. Why do you consider him an anti-hero? I'm curious.
Well, because he's completely down the wrong road at the beginning of the movie and then is put in a situation where he has to completely reset his entire way of being and actually turns it all around.
That's a redemption story. I can get behind that as the way that you're posturing it.
Okay. Don Draper.
He's just a straight up dick. When is he a hero?
There's a lot of times in which he actually does the right thing for other people, but he is a straight up dick.
Okay.
He's still considered the protagonist, so
yeah.
I feel like he qualifies.
What else you got?
And my final one is Annalise Keating from How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, that's a good pick.
I've never watched that show.
That is a really good pick. That's my that was my strongest pick. But yeah, she is. She, huh? All my picks are really good. All of my picks are really good. But that was the one that I was like, oh, this one is actually this is actually the epitome of an anti-hero because she helps people.
That's Viola Davis, right?
Basis. Yeah, Viola Davis.
Yeah, it's Viola Davis. She helps people on a regular basis for ultimately selfish reasons,
including the people she's tutoring and trying to help with the law firm.
Yep,
but right. They're all getting it on with each other.
Let's get it on.
Yeah, that was pretty hot.
All right.
Did you actually finish that series, John? Did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't watch the last season, but did it end good?
It ended very strongly. Actually, the ending made me cry. Oh. So it was all really right, good. Go back.
Well, I mean, he wasn't the show. He was peeling an onion when he watched it. That's what I understood. So some listener comments for the best anti-heroes that they could think of. Jennifer Miller, three that come to mind are Mad Max, Han Solo, and Snake Plissken. Mad Max is a good one. They all have a big heart, but huge walls built around them. I thought it said Walla Walla. Sorry. So they seem like rogue, selfish people, but when everything's on the line, they do what's right. That's a good example.
That's a good pick.
Nate Bruce, Dominic Toretto. Now him, I would definitely call an anti-hero.
Family.
Scott Clark's got a really good one. Porter from Payback. He was a likable anti-hero. Even though he was often a doofus, he was relatable, yet a badass when he needed to be. And the movie's trailer said it was fun rooting for the bad guy. Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely an anti-hero. It's a good one. I like that movie a lot. Director's cut, if you can find it, a Payback. Great. Adam Smith, Jack Sparrow. For sure.
For sure.
100%. Andreas Rielsel. I always say his name wrong, so that'll be the 14th pronunciation of it. William Money.
That was nowhere near.
William Money, Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven. I can watch this movie any day. It's perfection. William is bad to the bone from start to finish with some hints of a better person. He could have been if he made different decisions, but in the end, it all comes down to him turning into the monster he always was to take revenge. And he's still a guy I root for. I definitely agree he is an anti-hero in Unforgiven. I think it's Clint Eastwood's best role. And you can see him trying to be a hero the entire movie, and then his better nature just takes over when his friend is taken from him. Oh, brutal, brutal scene. But I love it when he goes after the entire bar. Oh, so good. Becky Trumbo, Ash Williams. I know you just did a whole thing on Army of Darkness, so it feels like cheating, but it's always Ash because Bruce Campbell. I can't say it better than that. Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn, and our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And don't forget, we have a Bandit giveaway from a couple episodes ago. We have Jerry and Marge Go Large, and we had another one from last week as well. So check those out, contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com, if you want a chance to win a digital copy of one of those three films. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This, Troy at Troy Heinrichs, as well as The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld, and me, I'm presenting Hitchcock, those other things with Troy and at Aaron Smirks. Now, we're going to talk about Halloween Ends here when these guys go, because they haven't seen it. But first we got what would have happened. This is where we talk about a scenario and discuss what would have happened. Like, say, if Thor had control of the Infinity Gauntlet, and then the other hosts offered their theory on what really would have happened after that. So because Black Adam is back in the sights, and of course The Rock is talking about Superman left and right, we're going to kind of run back to Batman versus Superman real quick and how it divided audiences. And you see that the Black Adam movie is trying to repair some of that divisiveness. Okay, we'll see what happens with that. But first, let's discuss what would have happened had Batman and Superman truly gotten in a legit fight. Because nerds have debated this for years, and I'm curious, what do you guys think would have happened? Amanda?
In the movie first specifically, or like in general?
Well, in the movie specifically, but generally. If Batman and Superman actually got in a fight, what would have
like
happened?
Like in the comic books versus like...
in the real... Well, it has to be the really fake world.
Okay, I just want to make sure, like, because I have a different.
Who cares? Batman, Superman.
I have a different answer if it's the Batman versus Superman movie, right? Versus
it's the movie. We're talking about the movie. I have no idea how you can separate those, but let's have at it. You separate the movie or just the characters. I don't give a shit. Just go. Define it how you like.
First and foremost, we would be out so many good quality memes and jokes over the years. That alone, I feel like, has united many of us, being able to say, Martha! Anyway, I don't feel like that is the penultimate moment that divided audiences, but I do feel like, because I feel like a lot of people agreed that that was a really, that movie had moments that were really bad, including their fight. I don't feel like majority of audiences were like, that was perfect. I do think, though, it has created a platform for people to continue to hammer down on DC year after year, movie after movie after movie. And so I think we would have had a lot more success in the releases of the films. And so I'm kind of talking real world here. We would have had a lot more success for some of these films, a lot more backing of them, less bad reviews for movies that didn't even come out yet, things like that. We probably would have been a bit more united on the DC front, but we were already divided to begin with. So it's not like that movie severed the tie between audiences entirely.
I got it. Who would win in a fight? You guys are like all over the place. Who would win in a fight? That's all I care about.
Halfway through that, I'm like, oh, Amanda totally lost the plot of the question.
Okay, so I'll keep it simple. If we're talking about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice movie, whatever, nothing would have happened. The movie was still hot garbage. It was the worst Lex Luthor ever. It doesn't matter what happened in the movie. Nobody cared. Martha was the only fun thing that came out of that movie, except for Harry Lennox's character. Harry Lennox's character was really
good. Wrong.
Troy also lost the plot. Terrible.
Yep.
But if it,
what does if, who would win in a fight?
Batman and Superman would have had a fight, nobody would have won. They both would have died, and we would have had much more time for people like Wonder Woman and other people in the entire universe. That it would have been much more entertaining, including Shazam.
You think no one would have won?
No one would have won.
Okay, so this is what would really have happened. I feel like we're doing the freaking ending of Clue here. Are you guys ready, or Aaron, do you want to go ahead and
but
go?
What if it happened?
Ready, Freddy.
Go ahead.
All right, so this is what would have happened. If it was going to be a genuine fight between Batman and Superman, you only have two real choices. Batman would first punch Superman, and then Superman would incinerate Batman. Boom, the fight's done. Or Batman would come up, start punching Superman over and over and over again. And because Superman's just sitting there taking it because it just doesn't mean anything, after a little bit, Batman will fall over super dead tired because he can't lift the armor anymore because he just finished trying to punch Superman, and he won't escalate it any further because Superman's not escalating it any further. And then it's a deadlock where you got Batman like, and then finally Superman goes, hey, can we go save my mom now?
So you forgot the part where Alfred is super smart and Alfred actually lined Batman's gloves and cape with kryptonite. And that's how he was able to
happen. It didn't happen.
Don't care. I don't care. It didn't happen. And even if it did, I don't care. Here's what happened. There would have been a fight between the two of them, and Superman would have taken the hits just like he did in the movie, because that's who Superman is. He's trying to do the right thing at all times. And if he wouldn't stop, then he would just be vaporized. That's it. So he'd be vaporized. He'd be missing. No one would ever see him again. Bruce Wayne would be on a milk carton because they'd be like, I don't understand how Batman is gone and Bruce Wayne's gone too. That's just weird, right? But nobody puts them together because they're freaking stupid. That's what would happen. There's no way Batman stands a real chance when he has zero powers just because he's super smart. I mean, I guess that's how Lex Luthor goes up against him, but nah.
Do you really think that Superman would kill him, though?
I think he would. At some point, it's like a gnat, right? You keep swatting it away, and eventually, if it doesn't go, you just...
See, I don't think Superman would kill him. I think he would get him to the point where he has to reluctantly give up or he's going to die, but I don't feel like Superman would give in to murdering him.
Maybe he'd just leave.
That was the whole point of Man of Steel, which was the show why Superman doesn't kill anyone, because he will ultimately always look for another way.
And then Commissioner Gordon's going to go home and sleep with his Martha.
Shit. Okay. Well, this game's a lot more fun when everybody stays on task, but, you know, it is what it is. So no matter what, when you bring up that movie.
I stayed on task.
When you bring up that movie, people have to argue about that movie. The movie's a lot better than Troy wants to admit.
It's sorry. Terrible.
Especially the ultimate cut.
Yeah, the ultimate cut is much better.
I could say the ultimate cut was better, yes. But that's not the version I saw in the Chinese Grauman Theater in Hollywood. So.
Oh, that's why you're upset at
it. Both movies I saw in the Chinese Grauman Theater were terrible. So I'm never going to the Chinese Grauman Theater ever again.
That's why you're mad at it. Okay, that makes all the sense in the world now.
Well, we're going to talk about Halloween and how it never ends here in a second. But do you guys want to say anything in parting? Because only Amanda and I saw this, so we're going to jump into spoilers on this because it's the end of 44 years of Michael Myers. It's not the end. It's going to go on.
Yeah.
How are they going to make it go on? With the exception of Michael Myers as a virus now.
Once you see how this movie actually completes, it'll be very hard to see how they can go on, but they're going to.
I agree.
But you got to remember, this is the end of the Jamie Lee Curtis part of it. There were still all those other Halloween movies, so they'll just recreate those and make those into multiple sequels and stuff. And we're on Earth 365 here in this Halloween universe, and we still got to go over there.
Troy, yeah. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
All right, Amanda, let's talk about Halloween Ends. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what Halloween Ends is about. It takes place two time leaps after the events of Halloween and Halloween Kills. First, we open 1 year after the 2018 Michael Myers attacks with the knowledge that Michael Myers has officially disappeared. Corey, played by Rowan Campbell, is a nerdy babysitter charged with the care of an absolute douchebag of a kid. And then tragedy ensues. These events leave many in Haddonfield to cast suspicious eyes for Corey's way. Once again, drama. We then jump ahead to the timeline of the current film in 2022, so 3 more years. So we're 4 years from Halloween Kills. Laurie Strode, Jamie Lee Curtis again, and her granddaughter Allison, played by Andy Matachik, have effectively moved on from the Myers attack and the loss of Laurie's daughter Karen. Again, one of the dumbest deaths in all of Halloween. Allison has devoted herself to nursing others, while Laurie has turned her sights to writing a book detailing the effects of trauma on herself and the residents of her beloved Haddonfield. Once again, nobody moves. We just stay here forever. Laurie also enjoys a rather flirtatious relationship with Frank, Will Patton. Both Laurie and Allison have apparently put Michael Myers firmly in their rearview mirror. So Laurie notices Corey, same guy from the prologue, being bullied by some locals in a parking lot, and decides to help him find acceptance through her granddaughter. After introducing Allison and Corey, elements that we're not going to talk about just yet occur, and once again, the town of Haddonfield finds themselves under the threat of the return of Michael Myers on Halloween night. So here's one thing that we agreed on, right? It is nearly impossible to really talk about this movie without spoilers because of so much of the plot is driven by things that would otherwise prefer to be untold. Would you, we agree on this?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Okay. So what I'm going to ask you, we're going to talk about this spoilery, but first I want to tell people that want to know like what you thought of the movie. If $10 is the full price of admission, what did you give Halloween Ends? Just your quick thoughts on it without spoiling anything.
I probably give it, it's tough to say, maybe $6 or $6.50, mm-hmm. just because it's probably not what you're expecting doesn't mean that I don't think they did a good job in resolving character stories and arcs. I feel like they really paid more tribute to that than focusing on slaughtering, which I think is kind of important when you're creating a conclusion to a story. And so I really like the validation that they're providing to characters and focusing on them as being important to the story, which doesn't happen very often in horror movies. So I liked it. I do think that a lot of audiences are going to struggle with not having as much violence as they're expecting.
So what was your score again? I'm sorry.
I have to make a decision. I'm going to say 6.
Okay. I gave it a 6 as well. I thought that overall, I like anything that takes a different slant. I feel like it's interesting to me that in this movie that was effectively, I mean, granted, it's the fourth film in theory. It felt like the end of a trilogy in many respects. And you have expectations. Everybody walks into that theater or streaming on Peacock with expectations of what the movie's going to be. And they went completely against those expectations. I kind of admire that. I'm also somebody who likes Season of the Witch. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But I like that. I don't think it works in every respect. I think a lot of it doesn't work necessarily. But I at least respect the idea that they were willing to try to go against the grain. Because you know what everybody always says when it's a sequel? Man, they just, it's nothing new. They don't do anything new. They don't try anything new. It's always the same thing. It's the same movie. But on the same token, I understand every single one of those people that think that. Because there is a certain expectation. There is a salt and nostalgia factor. There is a certain prerequisite, I would say, to a Halloween movie that they did not meet. So I am of two minds. I like that they tried something new, but I also understand all the fans that really just loathed what they saw. So I would give it 6. A lot of it 100%. Has to do with what they tried to accomplish. And I like the character of Corey. Now, let's just dive into it. Now, we're going to have spoilers. If you haven't seen Halloween Ends, you don't listen to this part or come back to it. Or if you don't care, keep listening. But I kind of want to break it down. What did you think ultimately of choosing the story this way? Where I admire that they went survivors over victims. And what I mean by that is they're telling more of the story about the people that survive trauma than just another hash and slash like Halloween Kills was.
So most audiences, I feel like, come to see slasher films because it's fun, right? A lot of it is about the different creative and unique ways to kill characters, and you're not as much there for the story. Do you know how many scary movies or horror movies that we just completely bypass how stupid the story is and we have fun with it just because it's fun? A lot of them. Mm-hmm. This, like you said, really goes against the grain and is trying to create a resolution for the characters, and it's trying to tie the story all together and make something that's cohesive, that has some sort of finality to it, and has some sort of respect paid to the victims of Haddonfield. And that I can really appreciate. I feel like there's a lot of value in that. And again, I mean, just because it's not what you're expecting doesn't make it a bad movie. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that part of it.
I thought it was ballsy. I really thought it was ballsy because, you know,
I mean, it is.
It really is. I mean, you got people that had full expectations of what this movie should have been, and instead you drop this new character of Corey, who, man, how do I say that? So you've got a character that's new to the entire franchise. It's supposed to be basically a four-film franchise because they ignore everything that wasn't the first movie for these three films. And you bring him in the last movie. Why the hell wouldn't this be part of all three movies? That's really where it should have been. But instead, you decide to really have the gravitas to say, you know what? We're not going to give you the movie you want. We're going to give you the movie we want. Okay, but can you connect it to the movie we want a little bit? Instead of having like things that go, this is my dislike to some of this idea. And I like Corey. I love the opening. I think the opening's fantastic. When that little kid dies, I was like, Jesus Christ.
It was ballsy. It happened quick and it was unexpected. The thing I really liked about that, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about this, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the thing I really liked about that is they left it to your imagination of exactly what happened. You don't see that it's, I mean, you have a conclusion that you feel very strongly that it is the door that knocks this kid off because it's so abrupt, but he could have pushed the kid too.
And oh, like, I never thought that.
But they don't show it. No, they don't, but I didn't think it. I mean, I've considered, you know, they're not showing it. That could have been something that they revealed later on, that he's a darker character than you thought. And when you reflect on the movie and you see how evil he kind of is, was that something that was in him the whole time? And maybe he did do it. I don't really think so. But I like that they left that tiny little bit of mystery. Whether you know it's not the truth or not, I like that they left something for you to imagine for that moment.
Yeah, I could see that. But I never, in my mind, he never meant to hurt that kid. It just was a fluke. And now we get to see that he had darkness underneath him the whole time. There's just certain aspects to it. While I like the idea of Corey, and I love the idea of exploring another character that I think for a large portion of the time, most people thought was going to be the next Michael Myers, right? I assume that's what you thought. That's what I thought when I saw it.
That he was going to take over the mantle.
Yeah, that we were kind of setting it up that we could kill one and then we got another one ready to go for the next series of films or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly plausible. And
sure,
we'll definitely talk more about the impact of Michael Myers and
how it's not just a person.
Okay.
Yeah. So the thing that I was trying to get to that I didn't like about that aspect is you have him, the odds of him also being with Allison and Lori and finding his way to the drain where Michael Myers lives and Michael Myers lets him go. That's where you start getting into bad writing. Yeah, yeah. The convenience factor is ridiculous here. And this is coming from a guy who loves horror movies and I love ridiculous connections. That one was way too far-fetched. The fact Michael Myers lets him go was ridiculous. It's not something Michael Myers would ever do. I get that they alluded to he sensed his evil and whatnot, but in the same token, I just can't buy that. Now then you get him wearing the mask and you get kills, so you get a big portion of the movie where the Michael Myers that is doing the killing isn't actually Michael Myers. It's just this character. That was wild to me that they did that. Just wild.
It's wild, it's bold, but it raises the question, what makes Michael Myers Michael Myers? Is it the ruthlessness of the person who has held the mask for apparently 900 years because dude looks old as fuck? Excuse my language. Or is it just something that can shift from person to person? Is it something that can change? Is it just evil? Does Michael Myers just represent evil? Or do we attach Michael Myers to a particular person? And I like that we have that question.
Why do you like that so much?
I just kind of think that it's an interesting question to pose to your audience of what makes Michael Myers something to be feared? Is it the man in the mask or is it just the mask? Because in a lot of these movies, it's really, and honestly, I feel like, especially in this quote unquote trilogy or quadrology, I don't know, whatever it would be called.
I'm calling it a trilogy based off the first film. That's the way I look at it. Because, I mean, you've got three different endings to Laurie's story if you really look over the course of all the films.
But the way that this has been set up for you is that this is not just evil. This is a person who has been consumed by their evil. This is the same person who has come after Laurie for all these years, who has come after Haddonfield all these years. And so even if someone could be as evil as Michael Myers, who could wear that mask and who could murder people, does it have the same effect on audiences? And that's where I feel like the success of this movie lives or dies, because a lot of people, I think, just find that origin of Michael Myers to be what makes him so terrifying, what makes the shape to be so scary, is specifically that individual and everything he's done over these years. So can any person just throw on the mask and if they slaughter someone become Michael Myers? That's the question.
I would say that's a firm no based on the reactions I've seen from other people. Because, man, boy, are people mad when it's... I'm like, the kills are about the same, so what's the difference? Well, it's not Michael Myers.
It's the person. That's what it is. Is it comes to me, that means it has to come down to this person. This 80-year-old man.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think what it comes down to is it's the same problem with the Rob Zombie movies. People don't want Michael Myers to have motivations outside of the ones that have already been established. They want it to be an enigma. They don't want to know his backstory, why he became how he became. Like Corey, they don't want to know how Corey became that way. They just want to know Corey is that guy. Plus, Corey's not really a cool killer name. Where Michael Myers is, we never really understand why he is the way he is, and that's what makes him so terrifying, because we don't understand. He never gives us the inside look at why he's such a maniac. Corey, we know his entire story. That's not as exciting, because it's either you connect or you don't connect. Where Michael Myers, you never can connect because you don't know. It's like a ghost story. You're only going on what someone else told you. It's the boogeyman. That's
I feel
why
like
he's
you're
so terrifying.
Still on my point, though. My point is just
I don't think it's, once you know the person behind the mask and you know their story, that's when it stops working. If we don't know their backstory, like if someone just walking down the street picked up the mask, put it on and started killing people, that would be terrifying because you don't know what that story is.
But audiences would still be mad. So if we hadn't got that initial introduction about Corey, we didn't have his background and his origin story, if you will, and he still put on the mask and pretended to be Michael, and this whole time we thought it was Michael, but he did stuff a little bit differently. I still think audiences would be pissed and they'd be like, that's not my guy, because he's not the man that we know to be behind the mask. We like to we have some sort of loyalty to this character that we have to follow the path that he's been down, and that's what makes him scary, is to your point, all of the things he's done without any real understanding of why all these decades. That's what makes him a terrifying individual. That's what makes him scary. It's not that it's the mask and it's not that it's murder. It's the callousness behind it. It's the mystery behind it. Like you said, the enigma. And so for people who are watching this movie who have a lot of disdain for Halloween Ends, I personally think a lot of it comes down to, you're not who I consider to be Michael Myers. I want to see Michael Myers killing people. I don't want this other guy who's pretending to be the shape killing people. He's not as fun because I don't care as much about him.
It's true. And you know what's sad is this has already been proven. But it's been proven in Friday the 13th when New Blood came out. Nobody wanted to watch, even though the kills were exactly the freaking same as any other Jason Voorhees kill. They wanted Jason Voorhees. They didn't want the guy pretending to be Jason Voorhees. There is something about that. They want the freaking same killer. Yeah, they want to, for 1,000 movies, whatever the number is, they just want to keep seeing the same guy. They wanted the showdown between him and Laurie, which is amazing because they've already had it two other times.
The thing that also makes me laugh so much about, and I'll be honest, even I have the desire to see the same actor portraying this character. The funny part is, this character is so old now that we're still like, no, let me see the old man fight and somehow supersede the strength of anybody else he's ever come in contact with. And again, there's another enigma, but we want to see that guy who's like struggling to keep his bladder contained for 5 minutes.
Did you like that? Well, because I mean, they make a case for that, especially in this movie. They make a case that he's just an old guy. He's just a guy. Like a lot of, you know, why people are so terrified of him is in their heads, because he's really, at the end of the day, he's broken, he's bruised, he's beaten, he's been shot, he's been beat to shit, whatever, in this movie. So he's still recovering from his wounds 4 years ago. And that's what they're trying to say. Like, he's not the same Michael Myers. He can't fight like he used to be. On the same token, that'd be great if it wasn't for the previous movies that all illustrated how goddamn impervious to actual injury he was. I mean, I just feel like I get you're trying to say that, but you're pulling it out of your ass, because the guy just got the shit beat out of him by the entire town of Haddonfield at the end of the Halloween Kills, and then got up and beat the ever-loving and killed all of them. So it just doesn't
hold water. Yeah, the math ain't mathin'. Yeah, if he was this decrepit old man, how has he survived all of these other things? How has he fought back to the degree he has? And there's something in us, I think, innately, where we, as people, don't see. I mean, it's the truth. When you get older, generally, you get pretty frail and you're disoriented and you don't have the same memory and you're not as strong as you once were. And, you know, your bones are more frail or whatever. But this guy, apparently, except until this movie, has managed to bypass any scope of natural humanity. And he's like, no, I can survive anything except old age. Old age is the only foe I have.
And the only person that holds any threat against me is Corey, this guy, who apparently, once again, as we all know, once you take your glasses off, you become a superhero. Jesus Christ.
That's funny. The Peter Parker effect.
Yeah, I guess, like the villain version. So what'd you think about Laurie and her and Allison's arc? I do love that Jamie Lee Curtis, she really got a lot to do here, because she was tragically underutilized in Halloween Kills, which was a crime against humanity, in my opinion. Because she's next to Michael Myers, she's the best thing. Yeah, she's the queen.
She is the queen.
The Scream Queen. The only Scream Queen, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I love that she got as much screen time as she did. I love that Allison got as much screen time as she did. I don't mind that they had almost falling out, that they had a feud. But what I really don't like about this movie, and I'm pretty sure you feel similarly, is how easy and quickly it was for Allison to become completely entranced with Corey for reasons I don't quite understand, aside from their like connection, their bonding over trauma, how she was able to just push aside her family so easily. Like, she had forgiven, she had accepted that this was not her grandma's fault until this man came in the picture, and it took her mere days. And I just really don't like the portrayal that puts on her as a young woman who has always been such a strong character, and who has that she would just fall to the whims of this man so easily and could be so taken from him within, you know, a couple of days, that she's willing to get rid of her grandma. She's willing to leave everything behind without her grandma, and that she's willing to just become this not great person because of this guy entering her life. And don't get me wrong, I know that
she wasn't going to hurt anyone. She wasn't going to hurt anyone. I don't think she's going to hurt her grandma.
But she also accepted this evil that was inside of him. She
knew it. I
don't
think
she
knew to the extent.
She didn't know the extent of it, but she saw the evilness. And she knew that this wasn't good. And it only took a couple of days.
She saw the hurt and the suffering and the judgment, because the whole community turned on him. And she knew that she felt sorry for him in that way. So I don't think she saw the evil. I think she saw the hurt, the woundedness, the frailty.
I think there were moments where she started to see the peak, but she was so smitten by this guy. And there's just something about that rubbed me the wrong way, where I felt like,
sure,
there could have been something that swayed her more, but she just had always come across, especially with her mom recently passing, she's a family person. So to rip someone in that Strode family away from one another has to be something really significant. And I don't feel like Corey's arc, his character, was enough for me to believe that she would be persuaded against her family that easily.
I agree. I don't think she was going against her family, though. I felt like she was just... She wanted to get out of that town.
To her grandma, she went at her, she yelled at her, and she was like, this is all your fault.
She was right. She was right. I'm sorry, but she was right. Her daughter's only dead because she wouldn't let this go. This is on her in many respects. Should she have let it go by now? I guess, but you got your mom killed, kind of, so I don't know if I'm going to let it go.
But she let it go until this guy came around. And that's it's just like, if she had that problem before and then it kind of like ignited something in her that made her like, oh, okay, you know what? Screw this. I'm done.
Sure.
Then I would feel more like understanding of it. But it just felt so abrupt that so much chaos could ensue in this woman's life from this guy entering after a couple of days. I don't know.
So were you bothered by Michael Myers not being Michael Myers, that the killer, up until the very end, Michael Myers, I think, only kills, an old man? And then, he kills Corey, and that's it, right?
Yeah, his kill count isn't very high in this movie.
It's like two. Jesus Christ, Corey killed more people than Michael Myers. How do you feel about that? Like, as a fan of, granted, you might like this or that, but as a fan of horror movies, as a fan, like, I can understand all the horror movie fans that are mad about that.
Totally.
I get it.
I missed it. I also missed it in the movie. I felt like I wanted to be creeped out by Michael Myers. And him in a tunnel just did not have the same effect for me.
Oh, my God. That part was ridiculous.
It felt like, I don't know, he's just hiding away in this tunnel and he's just going to grab, the easiest thing in front of him.
And can I add, okay, so he's in the tunnel all the time, wearing the mask. He's supposed to be a real regular old dude now. What's he eating? Rats? What? Drinking sewage water?
Maybe he was sharing food with the homeless guy because the homeless guy knew he was there.
Yeah, and he just got sick of him and kills him. So.
And why after all that time?
The whole drainage thing. God, that was just a bad plot device. And then he's bringing people in there to get him killed and people are falling. I mean, there's just... As much as I enjoyed them taking some chances, there was also some really bad avenues along the way.
You know, and let's be honest, it's a Halloween movie. What are what are people coming for? They're coming to see Michael Myers kill people, stalk them, scare them. And when you don't get that, except for the last act of the movie, pretty much, where he's a scary villain, it feels underwhelming for sure when it comes to that.
So I had a buddy that when he was watching this on Peacock, he texted me, he's like, I'm 90 minutes into this Netflix movie. When's it become a Michael Myers movie? Which is pretty funny.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair. As much as I enjoyed the chances they took and everything else, and I found overall I enjoyed Corey. I had obviously some issues with it, but I enjoyed the movie overall. But I understand everybody that hates it as well, which is funny because usually I'm like, I don't understand how you could hate it. I totally get how people could hate this movie. You had expectations and I think they were deserved. They were earned expectations. You kind of promised them there was going to be this huge showdown. We got it, but only like 10 minutes of it, where I think most people thought we were going to get this cat and mouse movie back and forth of Laurie and Michael. And instead, we got this. Also, you spent two movies basically cementing the idea that he doesn't give a damn about her. And then in the final 10 minutes, for some reason, he really cares about her, killing her. So it's just like there's some writing that really struggles. But what did you think about the final showdown? We got the final showdown. Jamie Lee Curtis got to just stick it to Michael and stab him everywhere and actually kill him in every which way and almost could kill herself. What'd you think about the actual finale?
I was a little underwhelmed with that also. The fight between the two of them, especially because they had given us a glimpse into Michael's age at this point, felt like two old people fighting. And it wasn't very scary. But I do love the manner in which he dies and the sense of community that sending him through a meat grinder, a car crusher, really gave them.
Yeah.
The sense of peace they received from this moment. But I did feel like when they're in that house and Michael and Laurie are up against each other, that it was super underwhelming for not having as much as we did throughout the movie. I was really hoping that that would be a huge showdown. But to me personally, how do you top the big fire from the previous movie? Like, that was a huge, that was an awesome showdown.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. For me, it has a struggle. I think H2O had a better finale for Laurie Strode than this one did, number one. I think it's a better overall movie than this one was overall, number two. Number three, I felt like, you know, I just thought it was overall better. But the thing is, like, I've already seen it. I've already seen the massive finale. And I also think the first Halloween 2018 had a much better finale. That was like a perfect finale to this series.
That's what I'm talking about. The fire, where it was just perfect.
Oh, that fire. I thought you meant the firefighters and the Halloween Kills.
No, where she's like locks him down there and she's like, I'm going to set this place on fire.
In fact, here's what I plan on doing for future viewings, right? So every Halloween, I always have to watch Halloween. I usually watch two Halloween movies. So what I'm going to do is go through the multiple variations of Laurie Strode. Which is, I'm going to watch Halloween always, and then the concluding film will be either Halloween 2, watch Jamie Lee there, or maybe H2O, watch Jamie Lee there, and she gets to behead him, or Halloween 2018, and then that fire. And that's going to be the endings I go with. Like, those are the multiverse of Laurie Strode, and I'm going to stick with those, because even though I know that these exist in this universe, I probably will ignore them, and I'll just go with 2018, because I can make my own damn canon if I want to, because I think this was a weaker finale to the series than the 2018 was.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny, because I think I like this movie better than the 2018 one as an overall movie, but the finale, the last 15 minutes, is eons better. Like, just having all the Strode women come together and defeat Michael was,
yeah,
I wish they just would have. You don't need to make the money, man, just let it go. It would have been so good.
That would have been good. An iconic ending, for sure.
100%. Absolutely. So speaking of ending, I know it's called Halloween Ends, but it never ends. How do you want to see the series continue as you know it well? And if you say Rob Zombie directs another one, I will stop this podcast
right here. Cut my tongue out if I ever say that, first of all, most importantly. But also, I would love to see them create either new stories that, or just kind of continue off of the 13 different threads that they have in the franchise and create something that's different, something unique. I'm also okay with taking some time away from the series because we've had so much of it. I also, though, I don't know if I could enjoy a Halloween movie as much without knowing that Jamie Lee Curtis would not be part of it.
I can. I've always liked Halloween movies. Four, and I thought Four is a great Halloween movie. Very underappreciated. I think what you could do pretty easily is kind of similar to what they did with Halloween 6, I think, which is right after Halloween. Maybe it's 7. It's Resurrection, maybe. That's the one I'm thinking of. Where it's right after H2O and they brought Jamie Lee Curtis back and said, you killed the wrong guy. I mean, you could theoretically do that. That wasn't actually Michael Myers. It was just some maniac who found the mask or something like that. You could do that. Or you just do another, you know, multiverse version where Laurie Strode doesn't exist. We pretend none of this happened and we just have Michael Myers back. I think whatever you do, it has to be Michael Myers, though. I think this movie proves it.
It does, indeed.
Okay. Well, that's going to do it for this episode, man. Anything you want to say on Halloween, all of this? Or I want to say thank you, Jamie Lee Curtis, because you keep coming back and you keep delivering. And she's fantastic in every interview. She's just somebody that deserves to be heard and celebrated. And, you know, all these people talk about all these different Scream Queens. There is only one in my book. And I mean that. It's Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, how do I top that? Concur. End of podcast.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. All right. Be safe out there, kids. Remember to not take your candy to anybody but the x-ray machine. Do they still do that? Is this still a thing? Are they x-ray the candy?
Or you just eat it? No, I don't think so. You just hope that the drugs you get in the candy is good.
Yeah. And share them. Purine is caring. All right. Take care.